Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The night sky is filled with billions of stars. We marvel at them, so far off in the distance, suspended in space millions of light years away. And we are more connected to stars than we might think. That's the message of our guest, the astrophysicist Dr. Michelle Thaler. She's Deputy Director of Science for Communications at NASA. She's also worked for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory Spitzer Space Telescope. Thaler is a presenter next Sunday, March 11th, at the American Visionary Art Museum's Logan Visionary Conference that focuses on two views of heaven, spiritual and scientific. Welcome to On the Record, Dr. Thaler.
Great to be here. Thank you.
What exactly does an astrophysicist do?
Well, you know, I think the word itself, if you just break it down, you know, it's always kind of a mouthful, but astro means star. And, you know, I'm a physicist that studies stars. So, you know, stars are giant balls of hydrogen. There are nuclear reactions going on inside. There's a whole process of how they are born, how they live and die. You know, all the stars you see in the sky have their own stories, and almost all of them have their own solar system. You know, one thing we know now is that most of the stars in the sky have their own planets. So, you know, I'm a scientist, and I study objects in space.
How did you get interested in that? Who or what inspired you?
Oh, you know, I am so not your good audience for this. I mean, the problem with me is that I loved it from the beginning. You know, my mother, neither of my parents are scientists. They're both like very wary of math and things like that. And they said, as soon as I could walk, I was trying to get out and look at the stars. And I could not tell you why. So I'm just one of those people that sort of hit the ground being an astronomer. I never wanted to be anything else. So there wasn't really anything that inspired me. When I was 10 years old, Carl Sagan's famous show Cosmos came out.
Ah.
And that was my first introduction to a person that studied astronomy. So the idea of, I mean, think about, you know, Carl was this amazing storyteller. Mm-hmm. There was drama, there was narrative. And I mean, to me, that was the first scientist I really met. And that's what I think of as what a scientist should be like.
Ah, so instead of thinking that that's unusual for somebody who's all about math and science to also be a good storyteller, you thought that was part of the gig.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think one of the sort of fun battles of my life is that culturally we think there's a certain way to be a scientist, that people should be very logical, you know, maybe not very emotional. They tend to be social patterns that fit more, you know, upper middle class men, for example. And the actual study and the subject of science has nothing to do with that. It's open to all kinds of people that, you know, go at it from more of an artistic instinct way, people that, you know, come at it from more of a spiritual way, which we'll be talking about at the museum. You know, the universe and the process of science is not something exclusive. There are many, many ways to do it.
Let me pick up on that, because looking at your Twitter feed and Facebook posts, it seems like you have a personal mission when it comes to astronomy or science in general.
Well, I guess the thing is that I have seen so much beauty that we know is true. You know, there are plenty of things out there. You know, oftentimes I get emails saying, you know, how will the universe end? Or can you prove that the Big Bang theory is absolutely correct? And it's true that there are many things that we don't know, that we're still working on, that we're still trying to discover. But what we actually do know, I mean, for example, I mentioned that there are planets around most of the stars in the sky. That's not a theory. We've actually taken imagery and measurements of those planets. They're so far away we can't take pictures that are good enough to tell us if they have atmospheres or if they're like the Earth or are they more like Mars. But we know for sure that they're there. There's no doubt. And what we know, how the galaxies formed, how stars form, how we are related to this process, there's so much beauty, and to me, it really brings us all together. We have a common experience as creatures of this universe. And I really have been very disheartened to see right now how our culture is trying to separate us into groups, and the other group is evil. And, you know, there's all of this separation right now. And I think my mission is to get everybody to just stop and relax a little bit and realize how much we have in common, which is almost everything.
The excitement and insights that you bring to the way you study science, I'm guessing here, you can tell me if I'm wrong, I would think it would be easy for some in science to dismiss these as a feminine approach.
Mm.
Does that happen?
Well, yes. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we're coming to grips with is that there is a spectrum of ways to be human. And I think that we have stereotyped that into a quote-unquote masculine way to behave and a feminine way to behave. But I don't think we actually fall into it along gender lines. You know, I'm one of those people that is not real comfortable identifying myself as female. I'm human first. There are men that I know who are incredibly, it's funny, I think the person I know who has the most emotional intelligence, somebody who can really draw people out, take care of people well, is a man that I work with. And, you know, there are women that I work with that are very driven, sort of type A, aggressive people. So in my experience, those gender roles, like women are more like this and men are more like this, to me, it doesn't really fit the data. I think that's a societal definition. There are people, and we fall along a spectrum of ways to experience life.
Why do you think fewer women enter fields of science?
Oh, I think that's complicated. I know for me, I was not someone who took to the formal science education very easily. I mean, I certainly got good scores in math and science until I went to college. And then I was in a university environment that I wasn't really prepared for.
This was Harvard.
That was Harvard. That's right. I mean, in many ways, I had a lot of fun at Harvard. But I came from a fairly nondescript public school in Wisconsin. And I just didn't have the math and science preparation to really be ready to take Physics 1 at Harvard. And so I was blown out of the water. I spent the majority of my time confused and ashamed and not willing to even admit to my professors how little I'd understood of the lecture. You know, I never asked a question because I didn't even know where to start. And, you know, I mean, it in some cases, I had to take classes over because I didn't really get it. You know, I mean, it's not so much that I failed, but I got a pretty bad grade and realized I couldn't go on. I didn't understand the material. I think a lot of women, especially, think that if you're not good at something very quickly, that's because you just don't have that talent. You don't have what it takes. You know, however we want to put it, you don't belong there. And as I mentioned about my childhood, I don't know why I came into the world thinking I want to be an astronomer. But in my case, I just wasn't going to leave until they literally locked me out and said, you must go and here's your restraining order. I mean, I was just going to stay here and study this stuff because I loved it so much.
So even if you got a poor grade or
go back,
or had
learn it
a
again.
Problem with some area, you never felt, I don't belong here. This isn't my thing.
Well, I constantly felt like I didn't belong there. See, the thing is that, you know, I have constantly grappled with self-doubt and with thinking I don't belong here and what am I doing? But as I had that, I call it my anxiety troll that sits on my shoulder all the time. As I was carrying around my anxiety troll, I just didn't stop doing what I wanted to do. You know, I think that a lot of women have been told that you must be comfortable and that you must think something is easy, otherwise you don't belong there. And the truth of the matter is that learning physics is the same as learning anything else. There's nothing magical about it. You know, I mean, it's similar to learning a foreign language. You know, if you wanted to learn French, it's going to take you many years to become fluent. You're going to start off slow. You're going to practice it over time, maybe go to France and speak to people that actually live there. And we don't have the two bodies of knowledge in similar contexts. I mean, we never say to somebody, there's no way you could learn French, ever. You just don't have the capacity. I mean, yes, there are people who are naturally brilliant at languages, but I think the idea is almost all of us could learn a language. And the same is true for graduate-level quantum mechanics. I'm sorry. I mean, there's nothing magical about it. You can learn that. Anybody can.
That's astrophysicist Dr. Michelle Thaler. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. She is Deputy Director of Science for Communications at NASA, and we're talking with her about our connection with stars. She's speaking a week from Sunday at AVAM's Logan Visionary Conference. Your presentations are very popular, and there are lots of them to be found online. And when you talk about science, it sounds almost spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Can that intersection of science and spirituality exist?
Well, certainly I think it does. I mean, I do agree that there is a formalism that's needed for science. I mean, the wonderful thing is that when you do an experiment in science, others should be able to do the same experiment and get the same result. And, you know, if you point your telescope to a certain location in the sky, you will see the same thing that I do with that telescope. And spirituality, as I understand it, is a very internal experience, you know, a very subjective experience. It's something that we can't necessarily share with each other directly. You know, we can use art and philosophy, literature, to try to describe what our spiritual feelings are. But they really are something that's individual to us and inside of our minds and our hearts. So while there is a difference in the way the two are practiced and how they're set up, for me, the big questions about where do we come from, where are we going, what is our purpose in life, and how should we relate to each other, those, to me, are all very beautifully and satisfactorily answered by science. And I think people don't pay enough attention to that, the beauty, the inspiration, the scale, the drama of the story of the universe. So, you know, for me, I experience this in a way that might be called spiritual. I feel huge joy or fear or you know, many different emotional experiences based on what I observe in the universe, you know, the real things that you see. And I don't like the fact that science needs to be constrained to be very emotionless, very logic driven. That's limiting it way too much.
The theme of the Logan Visionary Conference a week from Sunday is two views of heaven, spiritual and scientific. What is the focus of your talk going to be?
Well, there's a beautiful story as to where the atoms in your body came from. And as I mentioned, the thing that really has inspired me all my life is that this isn't a theory. This is something we watch happening. You know, on a given night when I was observing at Mount Palomar, we were searching for dying stars, exploding stars. And in one night, we observed about 20 of them, 20 entire solar systems blowing themselves up in one night's work. And we see billions of new stars forming, new planets all around us. And we see the atoms that you're made of. And I mean this literally, the ones that are in your body right now, we see them being built up inside of stars. The only thing in the universe that can make an oxygen atom, you know, what we're breathing, your body is made of carbon and calcium and phosphorus and iron and all kinds of great stuff. We know for a fact that the only thing in the universe that makes those chemicals are stars. And a star has to die, rip itself apart, and that atom then travels through the galaxy and gets made into a new star, a new planet, and then that's how it gets to us. This is a process we see going around everywhere around us, any direction you look in the sky. I mean, recently we saw a giant star explode and create 10,000 times the mass of the Earth in gold.
Why is it
at once? Isn't that amazing?
And certainly gold is lovely, but what does that have to do with us as human beings?
Well, it actually has more to do than you'd think. You know, for example, you know, every atom in your body besides the hydrogen was made by a star, and that star died billions of years ago. We can look back into the universe so far out now that light has taken so long to get to us. If you look at a galaxy that we say is 10 billion light years away, that means the light took 10 billion years to get to us, and we're seeing it as it was 10 billion years in the past. And we can actually look back to a time when there was nothing but hydrogen, a little bit of helium, but none of the elements that make you up. And then as we see this story unfold in the sky through our telescopes, we see everything else be built up. Gold sounds kind of funny and kind of trite. It's like, okay, I've got gold jewelry. Mm-hmm. But do you know your nerves don't work without a little bit of gold?
I did not know that.
You have about, I think it's about 0.2 milligrams of gold in your body. I think you've got about twice of that in copper. And our nerves actually need a little bit of those metals to carry electric charge.
And they got to us somehow from a
dying exploding star.
Mm-hmm. Somehow those atoms got to Earth.
I'll show pictures of it at the museum. We have pictures of how galaxies gather up all of these chemicals and funnel them down into giant clouds that form stars and planets. So you can watch that happening right now nearby in our own galaxy.
There must be people who hear your presentations and brush it off as impossible.
You know, I suppose so, but the problem is we have pictures. You know, as I can come back to a couple times now, you know, these are images taken with things like the Hubble Space Telescope. You know, right here in Baltimore, we have the Hubble Space Telescope Science Institute, and we can actually see this happening. We can see there was a time when there weren't any interesting chemicals. We can see these chemicals being made by stars that then die and distribute this back into clouds that make new stars. There's really nothing you can argue about this unless you want to argue that everything we observe with our senses is some type of an illusion. I mean, that's an interesting argument. But if you want to live in a world where you have some sense of reality, that something we observe is real, there's no way to escape this. This is what happened.
What do you want people to take away from your talk at the Logan Visionary Conference?
In my case, I just want them to take away some wonder. You know, I'm not going to be talking about anything technical. I'll be showing pictures that we have of stars forming, making new planets, pumping out chemicals into the galaxy. But the whole thing is that, you know, you and I are little bits of the universe that briefly opened our eyes and became self-aware. And to me, that is, I mean, going back to a word used by a more spiritual population, I mean, that's a miracle. You know, we understand how it happened. It's not a mystery in that way. But it's a miracle that you and I are a little bit of the flame from the Big Bang, from the beginning of the universe. We carry that. We only get to be conscious for this little brief time. You know, let's help everyone around us make the most of that little existence.
That's a lot to think about. Thank you for sharing it.
Thank you for having me.
Astrophysicist Dr. Michelle Faller is Deputy Director of Science for Communications at NASA. She'll speak at the American Visionary Art Museum's Logan Visionary Conference a week from Sunday, March 11th. The theme is Two Views of Heaven, Spiritual and Scientific. The conference is free, but registration is required. It runs from 1 to 4 p.m. on March 11th at the museum, 800 Key Highway, Baltimore. We have a link to that information at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break now, and when we come back, a Stoop story. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.